Award-winning tennis writer Jerry Nathan joins us this morning to tell the story of the end of one epic era in the sport of tennis and the birth of another in Changeover, a young rivalry and a new era of men's tennis. For more than two decades, Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer collectively dominated men's tennis. The big three swept aside generation after generation of young hopefuls for so long, it became difficult to envision what the game would even look like when they finally put down the rackets. Well, then came last year, the first year since 2002 that none of them won a major tournament, and a Technicolor future was revealed. The Grand Slams were evenly divided by a pair of prodigies in their early 20s. The effervescent showman, Carlos Alcaraz, whose seemingly infinite variety of shots won him the French Open and Wimbledon, and the relentlessly cool Jannik Sinner, whose power and precision secured him the Australian Open and the U.S. Open, even amidst a doping controversy. The name of the new book is Changeover, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jerry Nathan to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
So what brought you to this change and this turning, if you will, of men's tennis and the new era?
Yeah. So you have this almost two-decade process of the three greatest players ever in men's tennis, and that's Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, Novak Djokovic, in whatever order you like. And their brilliance, you know, created legendary matches, you know, lots of records. But the flip side of that is that it kind of stunted the growth of up-and-coming generations of players. And we're kind of left there for years wondering what was going to come next after these three greats. So my inspiration for writing this book was to kind of guide readers or, you know, tennis fans of varying levels of interest, kind of explain to them, hey, these guys did dominate for 15 years, but actually what's coming next is pretty awesome too. And I'm trying to contextualize that and show how significant it is that we finally have two young superstars taking over the game.
Tell us about those two young superstars who you believe are the next era.
Yeah, so these two guys are Carlos Alcaraz, who's from Spain, and Jannik Sinner, who's from Italy. And these two are quite young, just in their early 20s. Jannik Sinner just turned 24 this week, and Carlos Alcaraz is still 23. So both of these guys have strung together some of the most, you know, spectacular seasons that we've ever seen. And they do it in pretty distinct styles. Alcaraz is a real artist. He's known for his creativity on the court, his feel with the racket, improvisation, always coming up with new stuff. Sinner is brilliant in his own way. He's a little bit more predictable, but he's incredibly precise and powerful with his style of play. And they're kind of contrast in temperaments too. I think Alcaraz on the court can be quite volatile at times. He's always looking to give the crowd a bit of a delight, and Sinner kind of keeps his head down. He's more of a technician. And these two collectively have now won the last seven major titles in tennis. And after the long reign of the big three, as they call it, Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, it seems that we've smoothly transitioned into this new regime of Alcaraz and Sinner.
I mean, no greater endorsement of the point you're trying to make in the book is the Wimbledon final, right? I mean, this brings these two individuals to center court, and it's incredible because I saw that match before I read this book. But it's amazing because you really get the sense in reading of what drives these two people and ultimately how they got into this position and probably how they probably will be in this position for many years to come.
Yeah, that match that they played at Wimbledon and another one they played a few weeks earlier at the French Open were just incredible neat encapsulations of the talents these guys have. They play tennis. When they're on the court together, they produce points. They've got their own distinctive style. You know, the Federer-Nadal rivalry is quite classic in its own way, but these guys are doing something different. They play with kind of an explosive quality. They're hitting the ball even harder and even spinnier than their predecessors. And I think when you look at their match in Paris in particular, where Sinner had three chances to win the championship. If he just won one of those 3 points, he would have won it. And then Alcaraz storms back over the next hour and a half to snatch it away. They just have this ability to keep producing their best tennis in the most pressurized and tense moments in a match. And I hope that we keep seeing them clash at these really high stakes matches because, you know, even outside the scope of this book, they've kept at it. They've played four finals this season, and it seems unrelenting. It's very hard for any of the other players on tour to keep up with them.
I was fascinated, too, by Sinner's start to the season, where you look at defended his title at the Australian Open. This after a three-month suspension because of performance-enhancing drug. I mean, it's hard to say it screwed up momentum because it really didn't, did it?
I think that incident, and I can provide a little more detail, basically what happened was the story that Sinner's camp gave is one of his trainers on his team was using a topical spray for a cut, and that contained a steroid, and that got into Sinner's body when he gave him a massage. So it definitely brought some consequences for Sinner's career. He had to take a three-month suspension this season. And I think where you see it play out, actually, interestingly, is in retrospect. Because it was during the 2024 season where Sinner had his real breakout, but he seemed quite demure and a little bit under the weather for a lot of the season. And it was a little bit cryptic. But then once this news became public, it kind of decoded those few months where, you know, tried to understand why, even though he's the number one player in the world, he looked so sad. And the fact is, even during these tournaments that he was winning, he was undergoing this incredibly stressful process with the doping authorities, trying to prove his innocence. You know, 5-6 hour Zoom calls in the middle of tournaments to go through this process. So I think actually now that he's clear of that, and he's clear of the suspension that he accepted, he seemed a lot lighter and a lot freer, and he's won now three of the last four major titles. He almost held all four major titles simultaneously, which would have been very historic in men's tennis. So kind of seeing a new, freer, fresher Jannik Sinner this season.
You can take this question either way, which is, do you believe that it was accidental, or you can take the other version of the question, which is, do most people within the sport believe that it was an accidental administration?
Yeah, I can touch on both of those points. It definitely seemed like some of Sinner's colleagues in the locker room, and he's talked about this, he said that some of the people he thought were his friends turned out to not be so friendly in this moment. And then some people he didn't know too well actually, you know, showed support for him. So I would say within his profession, I think there's still quite a bit of skepticism. And I think, you know, if you ask me personally, having reviewed the details of the case, I just, and having seen the report from, they've had some independent scientific experts kind of review the story that Sinner gave, and they found it quite plausible. I just don't think the risk reward really makes sense. I don't think he would have thought out the very marginal edge he would have gotten from this steroid. I don't think it was intentional. I do admit that the story on its face sounds pretty implausible.
Right.
It's pretty implausible. It involves one trainer using a spray on a cut finger and then accidentally massaging that spray into sores on Sinner's body because he has dermatitis. And it's strange belief, but I think it is, to me, at the end, more believable than the idea he would have imperiled what was already a pretty incredible career just for whatever marginal edge he would have gotten from this particular anabolic steroid.
You mentioned, I want to talk about Carlos Alcaraz for a moment, because This kid's 22 years old and has five major titles, two at the French Open, two at Wimbledon, and one at the U.S. Open. I mean, that's a staggering achievement at such a young age.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unbelievable. He's a prodigy. I think one of the ways I phrase it in the book is that he's one of the most significant prodigies we have working in pretty much any area of human performance or human inquiry right now. Like, the amount of talent that was dripping off his racket, even when he was, you know, a 16-year-old winning his first professional match, it's always jumped out at you off the TV screen or in person, just the variety of shots he can hit. And really, his ability to keep producing that creativity under duress, I think, is what makes him distinct. And he's not one who kind of turtles up and becomes conservative when the scoreboard gets tight. He just keeps going for it. And in that deciding tiebreak he played against Sinner at the French Open final, he produced probably the most incredible tennis he'd played over the course of that 5 hours. So I think there's a real showman in him, and also a real sense of playfulness in him that draws a lot of tennis fans to him. And, you know, he combines the entertainment value with the pretty impressive resume of five major titles and counting.
It seems, right, that we like this kind of rivalry between players. That's fun to watch, right? I mean, if it's different people all the time, okay, that's fine. But if you have these rivalries that keep roaring back again and again, and it's up and down, back and forth, that is very enjoyable to watch.
Incredibly enjoyable. I think it serves every layer of fan, really, because for the more casual fan, it gives you more of a handhold narratively. Every time you turn on a big tournament, you kind of know where the guys to watch on the men's side, it's going to be these two. And then I think for the deeper fan, you start noticing the arms race that's playing out between the rivals, where each of them is trying to incorporate some strengths that the other player has. Each of them is trying to shore up their own weaknesses. You'll see these little micro adjustments from match to match. And it's a hallmark of the greatest rivalries in the sport. I think we saw that with Federer Nadal Djokovic. You know, kind of the classic example there is Nadal liking to attack Federer's weaker shot, the one-handed backhand, with his heavy topspin ball. And then Federer later in his career switching to a slightly larger racket that allowed him to handle that ball a little easier. So there's this fun interplay of technology, tactics, psychology, and we get to see it play out for a decade. I'm just pretty grateful as a fan and as a journalist.
I this seems cliche, but it makes the players better, right? If there is that kind of rivalry.
Yeah, I definitely think so, because the truth is this won't be the case forever, but right now they are so far ahead of the rest of their competition that I think it's a lot of the time they're almost coasting through the tournament, just waiting to run into the one guy who can actually cause them trouble. And Novak Djokovic is another one of those guys, but he is certainly nearing the twilight of his career. And it's really important for each of these rivals to have someone who can kind of keep them honest and keep them hunting for new solutions. And I personally, from just an entertainment perspective, I hope that there are a couple more who emerge and can kind of keep up with these two, because I think it's always more fun for a rivalry to have a couple more narrative wrinkles in there.
So what should we expect from the U.S. Open?
So judging by how the season's playing out right now, it's pretty safe to expect you'll see Sinner and Alcaraz again in the final. And I know that seems crazy to say when each of these guys has to win six matches to get to that final, but I think their consistency and the fact that there have been so few other players who can genuinely challenge them, and the fact that both of them have won at the U.S. Open before, they're both pretty comfortable on these courts. They're both quite healthy at the moment. And they're both carrying an insane amount of momentum. So I think we'll see at least one of them in the final, and I'm willing to bet that we'll see both of them there.
The name of the book, Changeover, A Young Rivalry and a New Era of Men's Tennis. The book is published by Gallery. Jerry Nathan, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
My pleasure, Joe. Thank you so much.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Changeover. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.